This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Aaron Ammons, Democratic candidate for Champaign County Clerk. But first, disability news for the week of October 8, 2018. New research suggests training public school teachers specifically to work with students who have autism makes a big difference, helping kids on the spectrum excel in mainstream classes. A new study looking at elementary schools and districts across the country finds that providing teachers with just a little bit of extra knowledge about how to work with children with a developmental disorder can yield significant results. Lindy Morgan of Emory University led the study, which was published in the Journal of Consulting and Clinical Psychology. According to Morgan, in cases where teachers receive specialized training, those on the spectrum, quote, were initiating more, participating more, having back and forth conversations more, and responding to their teachers and peers more frequently, end quote. Researchers involved 60 schools across 10 districts in California, Georgia, and Florida. At half of the schools, a website was made available to teachers where they could engage in modules related to autism. By contrast, teachers at the other schools participated in 3 days of specialized training through a program called Classroom Social Communication, Emotional Regulation, and Transactional Support, or CERTS, and had regular coaching and access to reference materials throughout the school year. Videos were taken of the classrooms over time to show how interactions changed, and the researchers found that active engagement and social interaction were significantly better in cases where teachers received specialized CERTS training. In addition, the study found children in classes with teachers trained using the CERTS method perform better in adaptive communication, social skills, and executive functioning. Amy Weatherby, director of the Florida State University Autism Institute and a study author, said, quote, "This study is one of only a few demonstrating the efficacy of a treatment for school-aged children, and the most impressive part, as it was conducted in public school classrooms with a good mix of general and special education teachers," end quote. The findings are especially meaningful, researchers said, since general education teachers in most states are not required to learn about autism, despite the large population of children on the spectrum in mainstream classrooms. As more students with special needs enter school systems nationwide, educators are increasingly designing their classrooms to boost behavior and academic performance. Sensory-friendly design focuses on controlling the sights, sounds, and smells that can be under or overstimulating to students with autism or other developmental disabilities. A few schools have been built for this purpose, but experts say any classroom can be retrofitted to improve its sensory environment. Said Nicole Eridix, a California-based educator and author of Inclusion in Action, a book about creating welcoming classrooms for all students, quote, "Surprisingly, you don't need an elaborately designed high-tech building to support a child's sensory needs," end quote. The adjustments can be as simple as filling small plastic bags with rice for a fidgety child to hold, offering flexible seating that allowed students to use bean bags, standing desks, or even rocking or swinging chairs. She said, quote, "I do really see a lot of variation in classrooms now. They don't all look the same with desks in rows and the teacher sitting at the front," end quote. Several newly built schools in Minnesota's Northeast Metro Intermediate District set the gold standard for sensory-friendly design. At the elementary and high schools outside St. Paul, architects and designers worked with teachers to create a healthy environment for students with special needs. At two centers, Hallways are shortened and curved to discourage running. Venting ducts run through the hallway ceilings instead of in classrooms and are larger than average to help diffuse the force of air and potential noise. According to the architects, many elements can update older buildings as well. Visual clutter on classroom walls can be overwhelming. Walls should be painted in muted tones with accents like bulletin board decorations added slowly through the year. Extra insulation or carpet on the walls and floors can help reduce noise. Some students dislike large open spaces while others don't want to feel closed in. Schools can layer their spaces by placing furniture and panels to section off larger spaces. Soft seating in a reading or relaxing corner can create a safe zone for anxious moments. These small but thoughtful changes can show extra care for all students. And finally, when a large service provider for people with developmental disabilities decided to move away from using restraint and seclusion, a new study finds safety improved and costs went down. Over a 12-year period, restraints decreased 99% and seclusion was eliminated at the Virginia-based Grafton Integrated Health Network, which serves more than 3,200 people with intellectual, developmental, and psychiatric disabilities in residential and community-based settings. At the same time, the provider saw a 64% decline in client-induced staff injury and an estimated savings of $16 million in associated costs from overtime, turnover, and workers' compensation. Clients, meanwhile, were far more likely to achieve mastery in their goals. The findings come from an analysis of the changes conducted by staffers at Grafton that was published online recently in the journal Advances in Neurodevelopmental Disorders, said Kim Sanders, executive vice president of Grafton and a co-author of the study, quote, "We knew there had to be a better way. Not only were these techniques harmful to both our clients and our staff, they simply didn't work. In fact, consistent with the data, we saw that using restraint and seclusion was just reinforcing and maintaining aggression and violence. We decided to create a new model for addressing challenging behavior, which was grounded in respect for all involved," end quote. As of 2003, Grafton logged 6,646 incidents of restraint and seclusion. The following year, the organization instituted new protocols using a trauma-informed approach. Staff were taught to be flexible, reassure clients, ask questions, employ kindness and compassion, and move away from a mindset of having the upper hand. The methods were deployed across a wide range of placements, catering to those with intellectual and developmental disabilities aged 6 to 22. Clients included those in psychiatric residential treatment, community-based group homes, education settings, outpatient services, early intervention services, and applied behavior analysis programs. Sandra said, quote, "Our system shows that you can eliminate the use of restraint and seclusion without compromising safety as long as caregivers are properly trained. Ultimately, it is about receiving, engaging, sensing, feeling, and responding to what someone is trying to communicate to us through their actions while maintaining the safety of all those involved," end quote. And that's the news for this week. But everything is done, don't hold me back. Don't hold me back. Don't hold me back. And you are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, joined today by a friend who has been around WEFT for a long time. Erin Ammons is a Democratic candidate for
county clerk.
County clerk. That's right. I didn't have my paper right in front of me, so I lost track of it. Okay. So welcome to the show, Erin. Well,
thank you for having me. This booth feels so foreign to me. I've never...
You're just usually sitting over on this side of the booth.
Most of the time.
Yeah, most of the time. So why don't you tell folks a little bit about the office of county clerk and why you're running for it.
Well, thank you for having me. And one of the reasons why I'm running for county clerk is pretty much tied to what you've been sharing here with Disability Beat. I'll come back to that in a moment. But I'm running for county clerk because this is a passion for me. I've been living in this community for over 30 some odd years. And for the last 20 years, I've been an organizer, on the ground community organizer, educating people about various different things. But this particular process of voting and making sure that people know their rights, know that they have access to the voting booth, whether that's people with felony convictions who think that they are denied that right. The truth is that in the state of Illinois, if you have a felony conviction, you can vote. So I've spent, just hours and hours of educating that group first and foremost. That was how I got into this. And then start reaching out to students and to places in the rural communities, just everywhere I could go where I could educate people about what their rights are and what the history of voting rights is in America. So that's kind of how I came into this. And the county clerk's office, the county clerk is to be the election authority in each county. So there are three divisions in the clerk's office. There's a tax division, there's a vitals division, and then there's the elections department or division, if you will. And that's the primary function of the office, is to run the elections. So, I've been studying the election code and reading up on the history of the office. And I've been doing that for a long time. It wasn't just because I wanted to run for this office now. All the work that I've been doing around voting and educating people and registering thousands of people to vote is just out of passion and out of concern for the process. So when this when it came across my lap, so to speak, and we were talking about running for countywide offices, I thought that of all the things that I would want to do would be county clerk, because it's something that I've been studying for a long time. So that's why I'm running. That's a little bit of what the county clerk does. And, we can go from there.
Okay. So one of the things I wanted, hopefully, that you can cover is accessibility mm-hmm. for voters who have not only physical disabilities, but intellectual disabilities. And so I'm just wondering what is currently existing in those kind of things that make voting more accessible, because there is a whole group of parents out there who have young adult, adult children who they don't allow to vote because they think that their intellectual disability is going to prevent them from making good choices or something. I'm not sure exactly what that is.
Well, that's pretty interesting because the reality is there are a lot of people who, based upon the way you have framed this with intellectual disabilities, there are a lot of people who may not fall into that category, but I question some of their ability to cast an educated vote as well. A bunch of people voted for Donald Trump, so that should say a lot. So, I really push back on this notion that young people or people with disabilities are somehow not intellectually capable of making an informed decision. I really don't think that should not be a criteria that we say that we're going to take away or preclude people from exercising their right. I understand some of the concerns, but I just wanted to say that I really don't think that should be something that we stop our children or our young people from being able to cast their votes. And then you can educate people about them. You can give them information. And I think there are ways. I'm really in awe of sitting here listening to you and just thinking about there's a time in your life where you may think about the other concerns that other people have, but then there's a difference when you have to actually live that experience. And so when you were discussing in your opening about your child who has a disability and all of the things that you've been learning through the course of this time, it really brought to bear what I mean by accessibility in my platform. So in my platform, I argue for and I want us to have fair, free, and accessible elections. Now, that accessibility comes from students at the university not being, their polling locations moving around all over the place and not having a consistent place to vote and making sure it's accessible for them, or people in the rural areas having places to go vote and not having to drive a long way to get to their polling location. But the thing that struck me most is what we were talking about today. There's just been so many people who have walked up to me at the farmer's market or if I'm out canvassing, and they're saying to me that they just don't feel at this moment that the current situation or the current clerk's office really goes above and beyond to reach out to those with disabilities and to make it easy for them and to make sure that the information is well known to parents and other people who want to make sure that their child or their sibling, whoever it may be, it could be a parent, has access to the voting booth. And so I began doing a little bit of research around it when I was running myself, because I just, the basic things for the average person, they don't think about, you know, is it wheelchair accessible? You know, is there an elevator to make sure we can get to the second floor, the third floor, the fourth floor? Is that elevator conveniently located? Or is it going to be more burdensome for this individual who has to use a wheelchair? I started to learn about sip and puff machines. We do have these machines available for mm-hmm. us, for individuals who may not have the use of their hands and can't push the buttons or fill in an oval. Mm-hmm. They have the sip and puff machines where it's an audio, where it's read to the person. And when the name comes up that the person wants to vote for, they sip. And so then that's how the vote is cast. And then that's printed out, and then it can be put in the tabulator. So there's some things that are available for people with disabilities, whether it's Braille, all these different things that you can use, but it's not something that's promoted from an outreach standpoint in this office. And that's why one of the things that I want, and I think you're the perfect person to head this up,
we want I feel myself being recruited.
Well, you are. We want a disability hotline, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so when individuals are calling, or if they say, you know what, I'm watching the elections, but you know, I'm sitting here and I don't know how I can vote. I'm a person with a disability. Or if a parent calls and says, hey, my child wants to vote, who do they talk to in the office? And is there someone, a citizen like yourself, who really cares and can be a liaison in the office so that we really think about that more broadly and more in-depthly, how people with disabilities can have access to the voting booth? So, you know, that's one of the things that I mean about accessibility. And I think this is where our friendships and the things that we've done in this community allow us to meet and know people like you. And I think that would be a wonderful way for us to create that sort of committee or commission of people who could help people with disabilities on election day.
Yeah, and educate about the importance of the disability community having a vote, because they are a marginalized group, mm-hmm. just like many others that are out there.
We were just looking at that. I think it says the data that we were looking at earlier says that if people with disabilities voted in the way that most quote unquote Americans vote, then there would be 2.2 million more voters in the pool mm-hmm. of voters. So that is a tremendous amount, tremendous number of people who could swing elections, who could really make the difference in the outcome of some elections. So definitely wanted to make sure that they are educated and informed and given the opportunity to exercise their vote. Things like this just came to mind, though. If a person with a disability wanted to go vote at any particular polling location, the election judges are allowed to bring that ballot to that person. Like if they wanted to just sit in their car, they got out of the house, but they didn't want to go through the next step of getting out and getting into the polling location, the election judge is allowed to bring that ballot to that person, have them sit, fill it out there, and then the election judge can take it back inside, because mm-hmm. they have the authority to do that. So there's several different things. You can take someone in with you. Your loved one, your mom, your dad, your significant other can go in with you and help you through the process and walk you through the process as well. So those are things that are legally available to anyone with a disability who wants to exercise their right to vote.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, because I think the last time my daughter voted, which I think was probably the presidential election in 2016, mm-hmm. we went to early voting and walked in, and the person handed us both ballots and said I asked if I could help Annie do her ballot, and she said no, she has to do it by herself. Which, you know, she can read, and so she had done her research ahead of time and knew who she was voting for, but it was just interesting because I'd never experienced that before, and maybe it was just that one person who was working in the county clerk's office that day, but it does happen.
It could be. I guess it could be that maybe the person did not recognize that there maybe was a disability. Do you think that was the case?
No, it's obvious. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't understand why that would be the case, especially if you were saying I'm her caretaker, I'm here with her to assist her through this process. It's my understanding from reading the election code and election law that you had every right to assist her through that process.
Right.
So, see, these are the things that I want to make sure that are done correctly. I have not had a negative experience when I go to the clerk's office with any of the employees. But I know that we're all human. We all make mistakes. Sometimes we interpret things different. So I don't know what was going on that particular day. But I've certainly vowed to make sure that my staff, when I'm clerk, is fully prepared and understands the law and would make sure that that experience is what it's supposed to be. Right, and that it's done legally.
I know one of the reasons that a family member has said to me, "I don't let my child vote," is because they maybe can't read. Mm-hmm. Is that something that stands in their way, or can they access that recording, the list of the candidates, and be able to?
So just like with the sip and puff machine, I think it can be read to them. The what I understand in reading through the sip and puff machine is that it's an audio. As soon as you hook the machine up, the first name for that race is read. And then the second, after, and then the third. And then when you get to where who you want to vote for, the person just simply sips. And then that's how the vote is calculated. Mm-hmm. So I think a person who doesn't read has an opportunity, has access to all those, that machinery as well. So, you know, these are, I mean, because not being able to read is a disability, right? So that, I think they qualify for that. So these are the things that are really frustrating to me, because there's so much information that a county clerk has. And if they just want to reach out to these populations, then you can. I was just asked the other day by a Muslim friend of mine, well, you know, why are there no polling locations in the mosques? Why are they all, you know, other public locations and churches, but there are none in the mosque? See, you just have to have people who have a broader experience and who know people and who have formed those relationships. And then you can bring all those gifts and those skills and those ideas into the office and expand the office and make it more welcoming to everyone.
So if you win the election, mm-hmm. in November, right? You'll be seated by March for sure. January, right?
It's
quick turnaround. And so there is, just FYI, there is a Disability Resource Expo scheduled in at the end of March. And it would be possible for you to come as the county clerk and register people to vote right there and then.
Where will this be?
It will be at the Vinland Church out there on Cunningham, and I think the date of it, it's a Saturday, the last Saturday in March, I believe. I think it's the 30th. Oh, okay. I can get you more information
on that. I would definitely would love to come, and I want to go register people wherever they are. If they're an eligible voter, I want people out there registering them. I want deputy registrars or concerned citizens or people who are excited about the process to go there. I would love to come. And when I'm clerk, I'm going to try to be out as much as I possibly can, being an ambassador for this office, making sure people really understand the importance and the value of them casting their vote, which is sharing their voice and adding their voice to any concerns that we have.
Sounds like, in addition to managing elections and all the other stuff the county clerk's job is going to entail, it seems that education, at least for this population, is going to be a big part of it.
You know, one of the things that I want to do is to partner with the school districts, because what I understand, and this goes back to your point about the educating individuals with disabilities, it's not just that group. All of the students who are coming up through elementary school should be given a significant dose of civics as they learn, especially early on. Now, this was what public schools were supposed to be about. It was supposed to educate the citizens about the form of government that you live in so that you can make informed and educated decisions when you cast your ballot or when you decide to run for office. And we have just done a terrible job from the public school system standpoint to make sure that our youth are getting educational forums and lessons in civics as they grow. Now, I always have a good time with, I'm just a bill sitting here on Capitol Hill. But you see how that was, I'm 47 years old. I was sitting in my aunt's living room at 7 or 8 listening to that song, sure. And it's still ingrained in my head. If we wanted to teach young people civics and how our government works so that they can make informed decisions, then we would. We can. We certainly can. But keeping people somewhat unaware of how things really work and unaware of the power structure that stays in place when you don't vote or when you don't exercise that right or when you stay misinformed, then, you know, it sort of keeps that keeps that opportunity at bay where we could actually change the dynamics and the culture of the country if people were more informed.
Well, here's something you may not realize is that a lot of students with disabilities are in self-contained special education classrooms where they never even hear the word civics. It's not a part of the curriculum because it's called life skills curriculum, where you learn how to cook and clean and do the things that help you to live in your own home independently, if that's a possibility for you. Mm. But actual academic content isn't touched. So that's another thing that keeps people with disabilities from being educated about, you know, the world of elections.
Hmm. You know, it's interesting. I was at the Illini Union for a big conversation, and it centered around race. But there was this amazing woman, young woman, who was in a wheelchair, and she began to ask questions to highlight the fact that there's this other group, as we described, of people who are being marginalized or looked over, because she said she started to just rattle off these things about what's wheelchair accessible, do you even know how many people with disabilities, why do you talk to me as if I don't understand? And it's just, the whole room was quiet, because there is an implicit bias, I think, that we have within the society as it relates to people with disabilities. And I think it's just, it hurts us all when we assume that this group or this any particular population doesn't have anything to offer beyond just survival. The way you described it to me, it was just basic life skills, but we're not actually trying to peruse your mind and get the information from you that we know has got to be in there.
We're not trying to allow you to be a real citizen of this country, which is really a very sad state of affairs, for sure.
So what would be one thing that you would say? So in that situation that you described when you and your daughter Annie went to go vote, what would you like to have happened there? And what would she have liked to have happened in that situation?
Well, I think that, you know, it's better if people understand that that accommodation is possible. Mm-hmm. In our particular case, it didn't affect her one way or the other because she has voted many times in the past. She's 35 years old and she's been voting since she was 18. Okay. So she knows the drill and knows how to do it. But there are other people out there who might go one time and have that experience and then never go back again.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, that's one of the reasons why. And when you talk about priding yourself on professionalism, it's not just the professional etiquette, but I think it's that extra mile to realize that this experience indeed will affect future experiences. So I definitely want everyone to have that type of feeling when they come into the office that we're going to go the extra mile to make sure that you know that we're trying to serve you. I mean, that office is built for and paid for by the taxpayers, and we should give you the service that you deserve.
Great. And when you're elected, you can go give that to all the parent groups in town and educate them as well. That would be awesome.
I'm sure you have a circle of friends and a network of people that you've talked to and developed over the years, and I would love to come and talk to them, invite them out to the location. Are there some things that we could do even to make it easier for people to get in and out of locations? Are we making sure that every polling location is accessible like that? But we only get those stories when people come and tell us most of the time.
Sure.
Yes, indeed.
And you got lots of people in your ear telling you all kinds of stuff all the time.
I want it to be fair, free, and accessible. And accessible is a huge thing for us, to make sure that everyone who wants to vote has the ability to do so and has the access to do so.
Any last words?
Get out and vote like your life depends on it, because it really does. This election, it's a midterm election, but we need to get out and vote like we do in the presidential elections. Don't take this for granted. Every level of government, we need people who are passionate about democracy, who care about people, who are not going to degrade women and people with disabilities and mock them, who are not going to say things that take our country backwards but take us forwards. Get out and vote. Vote Aaron Ammons for county clerk.
Thank you, Aaron Ammons, Democratic candidate for county clerk.
That's right. Vote
thanks
the whole for, ballot. Vote
thanks
the whole
for being
ballot.
Here.
Thank you very much for having me.
Stand me up at the gates of hell, but